Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening to you, at least those of us here on the Pacific Coast. The rest of you, good morning to you. Pastor Mike here on Into the Night with Pastor Mike. On this Thursday, as at least on the Pacific Coast here, we crossed the threshold into the 23rd hour of the 17th day of September 2020. Can you believe we're over halfway through September already? Good night. What a year it's been. And tonight we have the opportunity to pick up and finish a few thoughts we had from last week about persuasion or manipulation. Which is it? Part two of that. And what about science? We're going to add that tonight as we talk about equipping ourselves, training ourselves to think critically, not to be critical, but to think critically, to be able to process what's around us in a way that we can look for that still small voice of God amongst the chaotic things that are happening around us. And it requires some concentration and some reasoning, and not a lot of that going around today, I fear. And so that's what we're doing, kicking back with each other here on a relaxing time in the 11th hour, or the 23rd hour, rather, of the 17th day of September 2020, as we look at persuasion or manipulation part two. I did not have the time to finish last week. Why in the world I began near the top of the program with this sound clip. You remember this here? Remember that, cruising down the boulevard on your AM station? Well, there was a point to that. I mean, some of you I know were going, Pastor Mike, too much coffee? What would crystal blue persuasion, really? Well, there's a point to using that song last week. I never got to get to it. We're going to get to it tonight in just a moment, and that'll be coming up in just a few moments. And we're going to use it as an object lesson or a test case tonight for what we've been talking about in terms of reason, good reporting, being able to identify that when we hear it. And one of the principles that we've been looking at, and one that we have to remember, is that one point of view does not give us a good sound platform for making good decisions, especially as we come up to election time. I purposefully listen to other media that I would not normally listen to because I'm curious about how other points of view are developed and how they're articulated. It's very important to be able to do that and not to live in just a cocoon where we hear just one thing. This one point of view, you may say, you know, I know we've used this example before. Well, Mike, what can be more objective than just setting up a camera and not with a cameraman behind it, not with a reporter with it, but just set up a camera and let it go. Let that video camera go. I mean, what is more objective than that? Well, let me remind all of us, when we had real football going on, when we could watch real college football with actual audiences in the stands, and if you watch the NFL, actual audiences in the stand to provide cheering and reaction and such, in the old days, which weren't that long ago, we had a thing called instant replay. Why do we have instant replay? Well, at the beginning, it was more of the ability to see what you just saw again. Now, however, and it's highly or its more developed form, it provides us with often maybe three or four or more perspectives on what that play looked like. We don't get it from one particular angle. You see, if we just take one camera's perspective, we may find out that that penalty was not actually a penalty. We may find out that that running back's shoe was actually on the just outside the boundaries there, and so he was out of bounds. Or we may find that, well, you know what, his toe touched inbounds just before he fell into the sidelines there, having caught the ball. So in order to do that, we need different perspectives. We need different camera angles. And that's one of the big points that we've been talking about here on End of the Night with Pastor Mike. Now I want to get to why Crystal Blue Persuasion. Why did you use that song? Well, it's because it provides a life lesson on what we're talking about. And it had the word persuasion in it, and it had the word crystal in it. Blue I didn't care about, but are we using crystal clear persuasion? The song came close, and I had had a lot of coffee, and it just seemed right. Crystal Blue Persuasion. Do you know who wrote that? Yeah, I didn't until now. I mean, maybe I did way back when it was written. His name was Tommy James. Tommy James. And the group was Tommy James and the Shondells. I saw someone ask the other day, I understand what a Tommy James is. What's a Shondell? I don't know what a Shondell is, but they had some cool tunes. Here's the point to be made here about the origins of Crystal Blue Persuasion. If you just go from one point of view on the internet, you may find a website. In fact, I've found several that give different perspectives on why Tommy James wrote Crystal Blue Persuasion, why he recorded it. If you go to one, it's going to tell you, well, he was becoming a Jehovah's Witness, and this was part of his expression of his new faith. Another perspective, another view says, no, you know, he had a methamphetamine problem and he was going through a withdrawal when he came up with Crystal Blue Persuasion. Others say, no. It was actually he was sober, but he was writing a song to advocate crystal meth. Others say, no, that's not it. He had become a Christian. And by his own admission, he had been reading about the New Jerusalem descending from heaven in the latter parts of Revelation. And he was inspired by a passage of Ezekiel talking about the blue Shekinah light. Well, let's dig into that. You see where I'm going with this? If you accept any one of those as quote-unquote gospel, if you accept any one of those as the truth, now I'm talking about Tommy James and Crystal Blue Persuasion, we could be talking about one of the most serious issues we're facing today, or the elections that are coming up, things that could change our world one way or another, serious things that will affect our lives. And if we just accept one point of view, we're not doing our due diligence as a citizen in order to make good, rational, critical thinking ideas. By the way, if you'd like to weigh in tonight, you're still awake with me. Our phone number here is area code 657-383-1479. That's area code 657-383-1479. And you're always welcome to email me, especially if you're listening to an on-demand version at your convenience of our broadcast. Email me, please, pastormike209@gmail.com, pastormike209@gmail.com. Or let's say that the advent, the genesis of crystal blue persuasion is one of the hot button issues of our day. And knowing the truth about it is going to radically affect our lives. So if we just take one of those, we're going to have a biased opinion. First of all, let me draw to these versions that claim this is what he thought. There is nowhere in Scripture where the words crystal blue persuasion are put together. They're not there. There is really nowhere where crystal blue is found. Now, the word crystal is found, the word blue is found, but not in the context of persuasion and not in the context of each other. So let's take a look at one of the internet sites I was looking at. Said, well, he mentioned the blue Shekinah glory that's referred to in the Bible, the blue Shekinah light. Well, first of all, Shekinah, that word actually never appears in Scripture. What it's describing is often something out of 2 Chronicles 7, the dedication of the temple. I'll just read it real quickly. The first line, when Solomon finished praying, fire flashed down from heaven and burnt up the burnt offerings and sacrifices, and the glorious presence of the Lord filled the temple. We have later identified that in interpretation as the Shekinah glory. But notice in Scripture, the word Shekinah is not used, and nowhere does it say it was a blue smoke either. And then in one of those websites that was describing his Christianity and a biblical reference, they referenced the fact he was in Ezekiel and that this was mentioned in Ezekiel, that crystal blue persuasion was inspired by Ezekiel. Well, there's a kind of sort of reference to that in Ezekiel 1:22. Over the heads of the living creatures, there was a likeness of an expanse shining like awe-inspiring crystal spread out above their heads. Well, it's not blue, has nothing to do with persuasion. It is crystal. There is the word crystal, but that's about it. You almost wonder if the drug influence maybe was part of that. I don't know, because we're striking out on these other ones. And then they say, wait a minute. In Revelation 19, he was studying Revelation 19, and that's what inspired crystal blue persuasion. Well, those of you who know me very well know that we just taught on Revelation 19 this past Sunday, and I can guarantee you crystal blue persuasion, crystal and blue and persuasion, none of them are mentioned in Revelation 19. Well, he was talking about Revelation 21 and Revelation 22. All right, well, let's do some more research here. You see the process we're going through? You just can't accept, and please, and I'm not knocking it because I know a lot of people put a lot of effort into Wikipedia. Please do not use Wikipedia as a reference. Just don't do it. You can't trust the information that you see there. Again, I'm not knocking it. There is a lot of truth there, but you have to double check it. And there's often some mistakes in there as well. So just a general rule of thumb. By the way, if you're working with any halfway decent college or university and you use Wikipedia as a resource, your paper will get nuked, just letting you know. All right, Revelation. Let's check it out. Revelation 21. Anything about crystal blue and or persuasion? Well, let's see. 21, Revelation 21, verse 11. It shone with the glory of God and sparkled like a precious stone, like jasper, as clear as crystal. All right, well, there's the word crystal. And jasper, actually, if you look back in biblical history, can refer to many different kinds of colors. Jasper can refer to red, sometimes green, oftentimes green, brown even, or yellow, but not particularly blue. And actually, in many uses, jasper, as it's referred to, is opaque. It is not crystal clear. It's an opaque jewel. And you'll see it embedded in the ephod of the high priest in the Old Testament. But anyway, your point being, Revelation 21:11. Well, it mentions that it shone with the glory of God and brilliance like of a very precious jewel, like a jasper, clear as crystal. And what were they talking about there? They're talking about towards the end of Revelation there, the New Jerusalem descending from heaven, looking like a jewel, clear as crystal. All right, well, wait a minute, Mike. What about, let's go one more chapter, because you can't go any further than this. There are no further chapters in Revelation. Revelation 22 is it. All right, so I'm looking for crystal blue persuasion and according to these internet sources. Let's see, it says, then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. And by the way, I'm looking at 5 translations put together. There is no crystal blue nor persuasion in any of that. So what are we left with? Well, we're left with more research to ascertain why that song was named that way and why Tommy James wrote it. Now, I got to be honest with you. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I mean no disrespect here, but I got other stuff on my plate. I'm not really concerned with why that song was written. So again, no disrespect whatsoever. It's just I got a lot on my plate. Now, if this was something that affected the election, that knowing the source of crystal blue persuasion was important for election day, or it had a major, major effect upon our lives, yes, we need to keep researching. The point here is that we cannot just take the first thing we see on the internet and run with it and say that this is fact and this is the way it is. We have to take that extra time. You say, Mike, I'm busy. Well, I'm busy too. But in a free society, when we have the right to vote, we have the obligation to do our own research and to take the time to check various sources. Brings me to the whole issue about science. We hear a lot about, well, he's not obeying the science, or he's not adapting to the science. Well, let's look at what science is. It's just a reminder. You know about this, but let's just take a little reminder course here on the scientific method. The question when someone says, you don't believe in the science, the question I ask is, which science are we talking about? From which set of scientists? I mean, there are some things that are scientifically agreed upon, but I can tell you when it comes to a lot of things about COVID-19, there are various perspectives from various scientific groups, and it pays to look at them. And I know some people on the issue of wearing a mask or not to wear a mask. Either way, if you say, I believe in wearing masks, the other person will grow fangs and start howling at the moon. And the other way works the same way. You have to wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask. And people have actually gotten violent over that. And both believe that their scientific reasoning is correct. it pays to understand, even let's say that you believe you should wear a mask and it does prevent the spread of COVID-19. Okay, well, be able to back up the science on that. Whose science are we talking about? If you believe you shouldn't have a mask, okay, whose science are you talking about? And have you looked at the other side, whichever side of the issue you're on? So important that we do that, and we're not doing it. And I see this on the internet all the time. I hear it from people as well. Just accepting some blip on the internet as the gospel truth and not bothering to do some research behind it. Again, go back to my days at the University of Southern California and before that, Pasadena City College in journalism school, both print and broadcast journalism, where if you didn't have at least three somewhat diverse sources, your story wasn't going to make it to the professor's grade book at all. He was going to reject it and send it back. Or her. By the way, I had an excellent lady that was my journalism, print journalism teacher, and some incredible guys that were in the business as documentary producers and anchor people and reporters, investigative reporters. And I learned a lot from them. And what troubles me today is just about everything I learned from them about good journalism, I see very little of it today. And I don't care what you're looking at. The principle of checking different sources, of getting opposing opinions. Now, a lot of commentators, a lot of producers translate that into having two or three people talk all over each other, shout at each other for two or three minutes, and calling that a debate. That's not a debate. That's a WWF exhibit or something. All right. Let's come back to the scientific method here. Science is based upon questioning itself. The process is based upon theories, attempting to prove those theories, and when they're proved wrong, learning from that and developing new theories and new experimentation. Often a couple of steps, important steps are involved here. One is to make an observation, and then to ask a question about that observation, and then develop a hypothesis about it, an educated guess as to the truth. And then you conduct an experiment, or you conduct research in order to prove that hypothesis. And as a result, if your hypothesis is proved wrong, that is just as valuable as your hypothesis being proved right. Proving, understanding where we're wrong helps us develop the next step of understanding where we're right. So imagine it this way. And I don't think a lot of people go through this this process, understand the process. They flippantly say, well, science says, well, who's science and how did they develop their observations? What was the process? Did it go through peer review? By the way, that's one of the most important parts as well, is having other scientists, having other researchers look at your work and finding those areas where you may be lacking. Let's take just an example here. Let us say that Martin the Martian, the reporter, a reporter named Martin from Mars, Martin the Martian, is plopped down onto Auto Center Row here in nearby Modesto, California. And he happens to land in the Ford truck lot. So Martin has a question. He's here to observe vehicles. And his first impression is, wow, I am surrounded by Ford pickup trucks. more properly, maybe that would be a lot in Oakdale, where there are a lot of pickup trucks. And Martin is sitting there in the lot, and he's saying, well, from my observation, I'm looking around, all I see are Ford trucks. And this would make a friend of mine named Ross very, very happy if they were all Ford trucks. But anyway, so Martin is in the lot. He's looking around, and he sees all the pickup trucks are Fords. So he asks a question in his scientific research here. Are all pickup trucks Fords? So he forms a hypothesis, and a hypothesis often involves an if-then question. So if it's a pickup truck, then it's a Ford. If it's a pickup truck, then it's obviously a Ford because that's all he sees. So he conducts an experiment. He walks around the auto lot there, and he looks around, and yep, every single pickup truck is a Ford. And so he accepts his hypothesis. Yes, if it's a pickup truck, then it's a Ford. However, he does a peer review. He sends that out for other people like him, researchers or reporters to look at. And they come back and they say, you know, Martin, whoever dumped you in Modesto or Oakdale, you in one kind of lot. There are other kinds of car lots. Really, Martin says. And so his friends encourage him to cross the street. So he crosses the street, and by golly, there are some pickup trucks there that have the name Dodge on them. Well, there goes his hypothesis. He has proven himself wrong because he has now observed that his if-then hypothesis is incorrect. There are, in the realm of pickup trucks, both Fords and Dodges. And so that's fine as long as he's in those two lots. But then he puts it out for peer review again, and you know how the rest of this story goes. He finds out that there are GMCs and there are Toyota pickup trucks. And so the value of Martin the Martian's process, by the way, anybody remember My Favorite Martian? Anybody old enough remember that with Ray Walston and Bill Bixby? That's when television shows were fun. But I digress. Anyway, so Martin, our Martian, through this process, comes closer and closer and closer to the truth because he is willing to look at other points of view and to see if one of them might have a nugget of truth. And that's something that we're missing so much in today's society. We take at face value spin. And I come back to, and I know this is like beating a dead horse. All right, all the PETA people are going to be mad at me now. But anyway, what happens is that we forget we have to separate out fact from what we believe about the facts and separate that out from how we emotionally respond to the facts. And it is a process of looking at all three of those separately, then bringing them together to have an intelligent, informed opinion. And that goes for, it doesn't just go for your assessment of public policy on COVID-19. It doesn't just limit yourself to whether you vote for the president or whether you vote for the former vice president. It doesn't matter what a party you tend to be affiliated with. It's integrity. It's your honesty and integrity coming into the process of critical thinking. And we're not doing that by and large. You say, well, how do you know that, Pastor Mike? Well, sad to say, I look at Facebook. I read the tweets coming out. And the reason I do that is my job in many ways, both in radio and in some of the radio things I do, where I have to be very aware of what's happening and what's being said. And then in the pastoral realm as well, as people ask questions, I need to know what's going on. And so it's incumbent upon me to walk my own talk here and to be able to look at, to listen to various points of view and then arrive through critical thinking at a decent perspective. And again, my friends, we have to go through that process of identifying facts, pure facts, separating out our opinion, evaluation of those facts, what we believe about those facts, and then our emotional response to the facts. Typically, on social media, all we get is the emotional response. We get the knee-jerk reaction. Mostly jerk with a little bit of knee, I think. And it's sad because God gave us these incredible brains to work with. He gave us the gift of reasoning. And we're not doing it as a culture today. I know you are. If you're listening to this podcast, I am pretty sure you're a critical thinker, or you would have tuned out a long time ago. But we have to lead by example as well. And that goes for our research as well. And when I'm researching, for example, Revelation 19 that I taught on last week, I don't take just one source. They may be wonderful commentators. They may be highly respected professors. But you'll find inaccuracies from time to time, and you'll find different opinions. And we need to look at those and understand them and delve into them and dig deeper into them in order to hear God's voice through all of that and his leading for us to be able to identify what is true in whatever circumstance we're in. Does that make sense to you? I just want to encourage you with that. Now, next Thursday, next week coming up, we're going to look at shaming. A lot of shaming being done on social media. Well, the mass media, really. If you tune to a lot of television networks, you're going to see a lot of reporters and commentators shaming other people. And we're going to talk about the difference between shame and guilt and what each accomplishes. One of them is a good thing in God's economy. One of them helps us go. The other one of them basically is a distorted view of who we are as individuals and how we got to be who we are. And we'll be exploring that next week. And hopefully, if plans work out okay, we're going to explore that with Dr. Jim Hinman, a good friend of ours, a therapist and psychologist in town. And it'll be always an incredibly cerebral session with Dr. Jim Hinman. I call it Jim Speak, and he understands that. So we'll be talking with Dr. Jim Hinman, hopefully next week, as we explore the differences between shame and guilt and how each of those plays into our lives. Well, I want to thank you for traveling with me tonight. We finally got through why I use crystal blue persuasion. I hope it's a good lesson learned. I hope it's a good example that you can use in your own life as we ferret out fact from fiction, as we listen for God's small voice in the cacophony that often surrounds us. Again, love to hear your comments and your opinions. Please take the time to email, if you would, PastorMike209@gmail.com. PastorMike209@gmail.com. And we'll look forward to a meeting with you again on our weekly time, Thursday nights at 11 Pacific, here on Into the Night with Pastor Mike.